Nirvana Shuka Shambhide Sattvena Pratilabhyaya Naiskarmyena Vipaschita Nama Kaivalyanathaya Nirvana Shuka Shambhide Sattvena Pratilabhyaya Naiskarmyena Vipaschita Nama Kaivalyanathaya Nirvana Shuka Shambhide Please, Jan. Naiskarmyena Vipaschita Nama Kaivalyanathaya Nirvana Shuka Shambhide Ladies Sattvena Pratilabhyaya Naiskarmyena Vipaschita Nama Kaivalyanathaya Nirvana Shuka Shambhide Tvena Pratilabhyaya Naiskarmyena Vipaschita Nama Kaivalyanathaya Nirvana Sukha Samvide Sattvena By pure devotional service Pratilabhyaya Unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead Who is achieved by such devotional activities Naiskarmyena, by transcendental activities, Vipaschita, by persons who are sufficiently learned, Namaha, I offer my respectful obeisances, Kaivalyanathaya. Unto the master of the transcendental world, Nirvana, for one completely free from material activities, Shuka of happiness, Sambhide, who is the bestower, translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki. Jai. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is realized by pure devotees who act in the transcendental existence of Bhakti Yoga. He is the bestower of uncontaminated happiness and is the master of the transcendental world. Therefore, I offer my respects unto him. Purport. As stated in Bhagavad Gita, the Supreme Personality of Godhead can be understood only by devotional service. Bhaktyaman abhijanati javan jas chasmitattvataha. If one wants to know the Supreme Personality of Godhead in truth, one must take the activities of devotional service. These activities are called sattva or sudat sattva. In the material world, activities of goodness, which are symptomatic of a pure brahmana, are appreciated. But the activities of devotional service are sudat sattva. In other words, they are on the transcendental platform. Only by devotional service one can understand the Supreme. Devotional service is called naiskarmya. Mere negation of material activities will not endure. Naiskarmyan apiachuta bhava varjitam. Unless one performs activities with reference to Krishna consciousness, cessation of material activities will not be helpful. In hopes of achieving naiskarmya, freedom from material action, many highly elevated sannyasis stop their activities, yet they fail and return to the material platform and act as materialistic persons. But one who is engaged in the spiritual activities of bhakti yoga, one does not fall. Our Krishna conscious movement is therefore an attempt to engage everyone always in a spiritual activity by which one becomes transcendental to material actions. The spiritual activities of Bhakti Marg, Sravanam Kirtanam Vishnu Smaranam Pada Sevanam, lead one to understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, as stated here, Satvena Pratilabhyaya Naiskarmena Vipaschita. Quote, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is realized by pure devotees who act in the transcendental existence of Bhakti Yoga. End of quote. The Kopatapani Upanishad says, Bhaktir Asya Bhajanantat Iha Mutra Padi Nairasye Naivamushmin Nairasye Naivamushmin Manasa Kalpanan Etat Eva cha naiskarmyam. This is the definition of naiskarmya. One acts in naiskarmya when he fully engages in Krishna conscious activities without material desires to enjoy. Either here or in the upper planetary systems, in the present life or in future life, iha amutra. Anya vilashita shunyam. When one is free from all contamination and he acts in devotional service under the direction of the spiritual master, one is on the platform of naiskarmya. Naiskarma. By such transcendental devotional service, the Lord is served. I offer my respectful obeisances unto him. Translation, the Supreme Personality of God is realized by pure devotees who act in the transcendental existence of Bhakti Yoga. He is the bestower of uncontaminated happiness and is the master of the transcendental world. Therefore, I offer my respects unto him. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Jananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Ummilitam Yena Tasmai Sri Guruve Namaha. Namo Om Vishnupadaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Iti Namine Namaste Saraswate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Pashatyade Satarine Pancha Kalpa Tarubhya Shakripa Sindhu Vya Vacha Patitanam Pavane Vyo Vaishnave Vyo Namo Namah. So this is a very important point or important body of knowledge that is sort of encapsulated, you know, in this verse by Gajendra. And in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna goes to great length to explain this whole principle. He calls it the art of work. We're hearing here about this way of acting of the great liberated souls. Oh, Gajendra is acknowledging how the great liberated souls acted. How they acted, and is what Krishna calls in Bhagavad Gita the art of work. In the second chapter, he uses this word, the art of work, and through the first six chapters, basically Krishna elaborates in explaining this principle that the way a pure devotee acts, basically, what you're supposed to do in this world to achieve perfection. And so we hear about this process of karma yoga, and we hear in this first six chapters of the Bhagavad Gita the explanation of some system that Krishna designed that is called the yoga ladder, that is different according to the consciousness of the individuals. Then there is a way of acting that progressively you come to this position of the perfection of work. And something that is not a simple thing to understand. It's a bit confusing because the combinations of terms, you know, that are very conflicting. So Krishna explained that even an intelligent person in the fourth chapter, he says that even someone who is extremely intelligent, he still have a very difficult time to understand, you know, what is action and what is inaction. How to act in this world, and or how to function in this world in such a way that you don't become completely entangled into the actions and reactions of this world. So it's something very deep. It's not something easy to understand. And Arjuna, in fact, throughout the first chapters of the Bhagavad Gita, he had a very hard time to grasp, you know, what Krishna was explaining. In the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, the second chapter, Krishna addresses Arjuna's doubts. And he explains so many different things. But among those things, he goes on to say that that basically he was going to give Arjuna a path, like in, I think it's 240 or something, I think 240. He said, now listen, that I'm going to explain to you a path of a path of self-realization that If you understand it, you will become free from all reactions. Remember that Arjuna was very concerned about his doubts and his concern, what he have to be engaged in this battlefield. And, you know, he was a highly educated personality, so he had the understanding that there was something beyond just working in this world, performing duties in this world. Those liberated souls are the ones who renounce the material world, the renunciants. Yeah. So the Aryans or the civilization, the ancient Vedic civilization, they have that understanding. They have the understanding that the purpose of life ultimately is to become detached from this material world and focus on your, you know, spiritual identity and become liberated from this material world. So he have that understanding, and he wanted to basically renounce the work that he have to do as a kshatriya and be engaged in the world. So this is all the things that he was, you know, confused. And Krishna is telling, okay, I'm gonna teach you now. Listen very careful that I'm gonna teach you how you can, by following a path that when you follow this path, you will be free from all the reactions of this, you know, of work and the material world. And so he started to explain this process that is called karma yoga, but specifically he was explaining niskam karma yoga. We hear this word here, niskarmia. That is the process that the great sages perform, that the great advanced personalities perform. And Prabhupada translates that as the act in the transcendental existence of bhakti yoga. So Krishna is explaining this process to Arjuna, niskarma bhakti yoga, or karma yoga. And so he explained this to Arjuna, and Arjuna listens to the whole thing, but at the end he couldn't grasp it. It was still confusing. Why confusing? Because you still have the combinations of two things. Krishna explains that to be able to perform niskam karma yoga, you have to have detachment and you have to have transcendental knowledge. These two things, jnana and vairagya, combine with, you know, your natural propensity, whatever, you know, your natural propensities are there. So these are things that in general they don't combine, you know. When you act in the world, it's because you have certain attachments. And even the Vedas, you know, they have all these elaborate, so much explanations about how to fulfill your desires through your work, how to dutifully act in this world. So, and renunciation and transcendental knowledge, these are the things that are cultivated by jnanis, or by renunciants, by sannyasis, by yogis, by transcendentalists. So the whole thing, you know, to come out of the paradigm that Arjuna had was not so easy. So when he hears things like this in the Bhagavad Gita, at the end of chapter the second chapter, throughout that last part of Krishna explaining this Nishkam Karma Yoga, the term that he used for Nishkam Karma Yoga is Buddhi Yoga. Buddhi. So he quotes to Arjuna that you have to use your intelligence, your higher intelligence, to discriminate. So therefore, he tells Arjuna that by your intelligence, you should keep away all these abominable activities. He calls it, the term that he uses, avaram karma, you know, abominable activities. You keep it far distance. The verse says like this, O Dhananjaya, keep all abominable activities far distance by devotional service, by Buddhi Yoga. And in that consciousness, surrender unto the Lord. Those who want to enjoy the fruits of the world, they are misers. So, you know, there's a fruit for fighting the world that, you know, Yudhisthira being established as a king, and, you know, they can be situated in the proper position and rule, you know, according to the principles of religion. So he sees that there's a material result, there's a material purpose for fighting this world. And the act of war in itself is abominable. You know, it's killing, is being, Arjuna later in the third chapter, he calls the world as ghastly. You know, why you want to engage me in this ghastly work. So he hears, you keep by Buddhi Yoga, by this process that I'm giving you, this process that I'm explaining to you, you keep all these abominable activities far and surrender. He says, a man engaged in this Buddhi Yoga, service, this devotional service, rid himself of both good and bad reactions, even in this life. Therefore, strive for this path, this Buddhi Yoga, which is the art of all work. This is what Krishna says. That so you can understand, it's a little confusing for Arjuna. Okay, you know, renunciation work. So, and Krishna goes on to say, by those engaging in devotional service, this Buddhi Yoga to the Lord, great sages and devotees free themselves from the resolve of work in the material world. In this way, become free from the cycle of birth and death and obtain the stage beyond all miseries by going back home, back to Godhead. So, in the beginning of the third chapter, Arjuna says, you know, you're telling me that I should be in Buddhi, that I should be in Buddhi Yoga, which, you know, will keep all these abominable actions far. But then you tell me at the end of the second chapter, Arjuna, therefore, pick up your bow and arrows and fight. I don't understand. So, you know, which one? You tell me one thing. You tell me two things here. Tell me one thing that, you know, that will make sense. Either, you know, I act in Buddhi Yoga, renunciation, you know, keep all these actions, activities far away, abominable activities, and be situated in yoga. And be situated and not being affected by these reactions, these good and bad reactions of work. So tell me one thing. So Krishna goes on to explain this in much more detail, this Nishkam Karma Yoga. And so through the third chapter and the fourth chapter, he goes on to explain that you still have to act, that there's no way you can stop acting, but you have to learn how to act without attachments. without attachment to the result. So let's leave it there, and then just stop it there for a moment. And then in that chapter, there's a review, chapter 3, of the yoga ladder. So we just, first you start with karmakanda. And karmakanda is religious activities that the purpose is just sense gratification. So you follow religious principles for the result, and the result that you look in is sense gratification. There is no spiritual objective in following religious principles. So there are injunctions in the Vedas for that type of consciousness. So the actor, or the fruitive actor, the karma, the karmi, that's what, you know, term karmi means, a fruitive actor, follows the principle that is prescribed in the Vedas for obtaining their material desires. But it is designed in such a way that, because it's regulated by religion, by the scriptures, then the person start to elevate their consciousness, because the way to obtain their material desires is by the performance of sacrifices, religious sacrifices. And in the performance of those religious sacrifices, they are in association with brahmanas. And from the brahmanas, they hear the other two parts of the Vedas, which is, so there's the karma kanda, there's the upasana kanda, and there is the karma kanda, upasana kanda, and there's the third one, was it? The jnana kanda and the upasana kanda. Okay, thanks. So they start to hear the jnana kanda part and the upasana kanda. The jnana kanda explains about spirit, explains about the difference between the body and the soul. So the eternity of the soul. And the upasana kanda is worship, is the means of worship. So they listen to these things in association with brahmanas, and they start to understand that there is, you know, there's a higher reality. But those persons who are attached to fruit of result, they, you know, Krishna explains in the third chapter, that's their fixation, and therefore they worship the demigods. They worship demigods to obtain those results. They explain that they're less intelligent. But at one point, the karma kandi start to understand that, you know, that there's no, they become frustrated because they cannot achieve lasting happiness through material sense gratification. So they start to look to the next stage, which is the performance of sacrifices for a spiritual objective. So they have now, they take a spiritual objective. They want to elevate their consciousness. They want to become self-realized. And however, in that next stage, in general, they still have to deal with material desires. But their objective now is, I want to become self-realized. I want to overcome the condition that I have of my material desires. And that stage is called karma yoga. But in karma yoga, the first stage is called sakama karma yoga. Sakama means that you have desires, but you perform the process of karma yoga for the goal of becoming free from material desires. So as you advance in the process of Sakam Karma Yoga, then you come to the Nishkam Karma Yoga. And in the Nishkam Karma Yoga, now you're free from the desires, your personal desire, your material desires, and you perform the objective is still, you know, self-realization, but you're free from material desires. And however, you still have some attachment to the particular work. That is the explanation. And one thing that Prabhupada quotes in the purport is a very important verse that is a verse that is appears in the instructions of Narada Muni to Srila Vyasadeva. And he says, Naskarmyan Api Achyuta Bhava Bharjitam, basically, is that the activities of Niskarma, Karma Yoga, they could be, they don't necessarily mean devotional service. You can still act without attachment and be in that platform of acting without attachment, but not necessarily being for the purpose of, you know, the loving service of Krishna. So Narada Muni says to Vyasadeva that unless one performs the activities of Krishna consciousness in reference, when one performs the activities of renunciation or Niskam Karma Yoga under Krishna consciousness, under bhakti, then it won't help you. You won't be able to achieve the result of self-realization. And Prabhupada explains that you have great yogis that they're in that platform of renunciation, but because they haven't taken shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord, they again fall down. And there's a famous verse that Prabhupada quotes very often from Lord Brahma's prayers to Krishna. What is it? Now I forgot. Yenyera vindaksha vimukta maninas tuayi ashta baba abhishuddha buddhaya aruhyo krichena padam padam tata padanti adho nadrita yushman angrajaha. That all of those great yogis, jnanis, personalities, that they actually think themselves liberated, but it's not really liberation. The liberation is only on their mind, vimukta maninas. In their mind, they think they're liberated, but it's not so, because their buddhi is avishuddha. It's not suddha. Suddha is avishuddha. It's still polluted. It's contaminated. There is contaminated because they don't have the proper connection with the personality of Godhead. They haven't taken shelter of the lotus feet of Krishna, and therefore, padanti ado nadrita yushman angrajaha. Then, even though if they achieve, you know, after great austerities, the destination, even if they go as far as becoming, as merging, as achieving Sayuya Mukti, they still fall down from that position because they haven't taken shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord. So, not necessarily Niskarma Karma Yoga can allow you to achieve the goal of self-realization and get the happiness, the position of the verses here, Nirvana, which is something Nirvana Sukha, the happiness of being fully free and liberated from this material world, is not possible. It won't be achieved. So then the process that Krishna explained is Nishkam Karma Yoga, but as Bhakti Yoga, you know. But even then, Arjuna still, that was the fourth chapter still was something, he couldn't clasp the whole concept, you know. In the fifth chapter, he still asked to Krishna that, you know, that you still telling me about, you know, Krishna, Arjuna say in the fifth chapter at the beginning, oh Krishna, first of all, you ask me to renounce work. Then again, you recommend to work in devotion. So this comes from something that Krishna says in the fourth chapter. He says, you know, that one should understand the difference between action and inaction, karma and akarma. So karma means that you become entangled. Akarma is what you really want to be. He says that there are three things. There is karma, vikarma, and akarma. You remember those parts, you're reading the Bhagavad Gita. So karma means actions according to the Vedas, but there is some reaction that you have, this good reaction. When you act according to the religious principles, then you receive good reaction. You have your situation in this material world, it becomes rewarded with, you know, some better situations, you know, heavenly planets and things like that. Then there's vikarma, which are actions that are forbidden in the scriptures, sinful actions. And then you got punished with vikarma. So then, you know, then you have to suffer the reactions of sinful activities in some hellish situation, and, you know, anyway, some very difficult situation. And then there's akarma, which are actions that don't produce any reactions. And so Krishna says to Arjuna, so be situated in akarma. So now Arjuna, okay, I thought I was getting a little bit ahead on this one. I thought I was understanding a little bit. But now, you know, so should I act? I mean, akarma means then no karma. So mean no work. So should I renounce? So is renouncing work or is working in devotion? You know, he's getting there, you know. So working in devotion means working. No working means no working. So I'm still confused, you know. And Krishna says, he actually says, actually they're the same. Akarma, Krishna replies, the renunciation of work and work in devotion are both good for liberation. They have they achieve the same goal. So akarma is something that later in chapter 6, Krishna explains that is is what sannyas do. The sannyas is renounce work. But Krishna is recommended to Arjuna work in devotion. And so the sannyasi renounce work, and that is the idea that Arjuna has of spirituality. And that's in general the conception that, at least in most people have, that there is a separate, you can't combine, you're either spiritual or you're materialistic. There's no such a thing of being materialistic and spiritual. You know, these are two things. You know, either you work or you're spiritual. Spiritual is on none of this world. So especially in Indian culture, this is very, very sort of entrenched, you know, that retirement means, you know, now you become, you know, a sannyas, and you renounce work. You have nothing to do with this world. So, and that will be a spiritual. So Krishna explains, actually both of them are good for liberation. Working in devotion and renouncing work, both will get you there. In the sixth chapter, Krishna finished to clarify the whole thing, and Arjuna got it. So he says that as long as you have material desires, work in devotion is fit for you. As long as we have in the position, the position of Arjuna, that he still has some conditioning, at least, you know, the part that Arjuna was playing. So he said that as long as there's some desires, this working devotion is appropriate. It's the right path. When you're fully free from material desires, then renunciation is possible. But if you renounce the work, if you renounce work and you still have certain things in there, you become a pretender. And you'll be sort of trying to meditate and just, you know, thinking, you know, how Duryodhana was such a, you know, horrible person, meant to be punished. Like that. So the path of Nishkam Karma Yoga, work in Krishna consciousness, that's the title of the fifth chapter, you know, is tailored for us. And how do we do that? How do we follow? How do we learn, say, for ourselves, who is, you know, a conditioned soul with material desires, you know, how do we learn to engage in this Nishkam Karma Yoga, working Krishna consciousness? Krishna says we have to follow the great devotees. The great devotees, they achieve that position by so many great devotees, they achieve that position. And in the fourth chapter, Krishna quotes, you know, great personalities such as King Janaka. He achieved that. He himself, Krishna, acts in devotion. You know, he shows by example. Krishna himself say, I show by example, so people follow. So following the great personalities that are acting in such a way, and that's what Gajendra is explaining in this verse. He recognizes that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is realized by pure devotees who act in the transcendental existence of Bhakti Yoga, who act in this process of Nishkam Karma Yoga, Bhakti Yoga. And that's how they realize the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And by that process, Krishna bestow upon them the uncontaminated happiness, this nirvana sukha, because Krishna is the master of the transcendental world, is Kaivalya Nataya. So Gajendra is recognizing that and offering obeisances to the Supreme Lord. To the best of my abilities, I explain. It's still. It's a very deep subject matter, this understanding. But it's so important because it's what Krishna, is the path that Krishna has given that is tailored to conditioned souls in this material world. That is the Bhagavad Gita teaching, and is meant for us to understand how to act in this, path of Nishkarma Bhakti Yoga, like that, Nishkarma Bhakti Yoga. Any comment or questions? Yes, Prabhu.
Hare Krishna, thank you for the class. My question is related to, you were mentioning karma, a karma be karma. One thing I was looking over my notes recently, and one thing I really appreciated in the Bhagavatam, it's one of the most important points that I kind of read in the Bhagavatam. It's in the ninth canto, chapter 11, verse 20 and 21. And in that verse, those series of verses, it says that when Lord Rama killed Ravana, and when he built the stone bridge, the floating stone bridge across the Indian Ocean, it says those activities do not constitute the glories of Lord Ram. Then in the next verse, it said what actually constitute his glories is his characteristics and his personal integrity. The reason I found that I appreciate that point is because if his mystic powers was his glories, that means Hiranyakashipu is also glorious, and so many other demons with mystic powers. But they don't have good character, so nothing they do is glorious. And this is related to the point you were mentioning of a karma, karma v. karma, and what was it? Karma, a karma, v. karma. And so one thing I appreciated, there's that verse in the Bhagavatam that says, Narayana Pada Sarvina Kutashina Bibhati Swarga Pavarga Nadakeshu Apitulyata Nadarshinaha. That a devotee, he doesn't distinguish between whether he has good karma, bad karma, a karma, this karma. He doesn't care. And this verse says, only this uncontaminated happiness can be bestowed by the Lord. So we could speak Sanskrit. We could do so many things to, think we're, happy. But how do we come to that stage of not distinguishing between, our various karmas, and it doesn't matter, which situation we're in. How do we come to that devotional character? Because it says only the Lord can bestow that type of happiness. So we could speak so much knowledge we want, but still, we're put in difficult circumstances, still we can't tolerate. So what are some things we could do? It says Shravanam Kirtan on those verses, but I'll just mention one thing that really helped me out. The direction I'm going is, it seems like Prabhupada mentions Shravanam Kirtan of Vishnu, these series of verses, and it's usually described that Shravanam Kirtan is the most important, but how important is praying to the Lord? Because like Nityananda Prabhu mentioned yesterday, it's not so much what we do, but how we do it. And Shravanam Kirtan can be very mechanical unless we pray for the mercy of the Lord. And that's the kind of the direction I'm going. So how important is...
Number two, just bring it down.
Praying for the Lord's mercy, because I'll just mention one last point, sorry, before I go on. The one thing that helps me in Bhagavatam class is that sometimes people ask me, how do I ask so many questions? I'm like, I've never been eloquent throughout my whole life. My brother's been very eloquent. So when I'm coming to Bhagavatam classes and the lessons I inculcated from my various teachers is that you have to pray for the mercy of the Lord. So I don't know what I'm going to ask. And it seems like the Lord has helped me every time. So I don't know what to do. But how important is praying for the mercy of the Lord at every step? Because Shravanam Kirtan is considered the most important, but it could be very mechanical. And so can you elaborate on those points? It's not really a question, but
yeah,
it's kind of directional.
There's two questions. The first one, I sort of lost the first one. The first one was about how we can.
I kind of answered my question. Maybe you could elaborate on it. The direction was going. I mentioned that how can we develop. This verse mentions only the Lord can bestow uncontaminated happiness. And the direction I was going is that you mentioned karma, a karma, v. karma, and It's described that the devotee doesn't distinguish between, because Haridas Thakur, he was beaten in 22 marketplaces, and he still only saw the good in the heart of the people who beat him. So how do we come to that stage of uncontaminated happiness?
Okay, how,
and I was going sort of the direction of praying for the mercy of the Lord, so maybe you could laugh.
Prabhupada, in the last paragraph of his purport, he mentions the key. When one is free from all contamination and acts in devotional service under the direction of the spiritual master, one is in the platform of nice karma. So, so how to get to that? Well, under the direction of the spiritual master. It's this process. It's just how you get there. It's a compulsory thing that we have. It's part of Krishna's system. So we have to have the shelter of the spiritual master. That's how we get trained. That's how we get directed. That's how we become cleansed of all the things that are blocking, you know, our devotion, our connection with Krishna. That's why, you know, you read so much the praises that what the spiritual master does to us. We sing to Srila Prabhupada every morning. And so that's the important thing. That's how. For us, it's compulsory. That's what Krishna says. And important to pray to Krishna? Well, tremendously important. We know that. And I think possibly one of the most important prayers I would say that we have is just to pray, you know, to the Lord to guide us to the lotus feet of our spiritual master. And when we're guided to the lotus feet of our spiritual master, we should pray to actually being able to serve, you know, my Guru Maharaj. So to have the intelligence and the capacity to serve properly. But you know, that combination, that relationship is so important. Is that right? Any other question? Yes, Prabhu. Bring it just a little bit up.
Is it okay?
To speak close.
Yeah, is this okay?
No, this is good. This is good. Okay. You just have to speak close.
Okay. I'd like to ask a question. You were talking about combining jnana and vairagya, and about how you were saying that Arjuna's acts on the battlefield, though they're ghastly and abominable, because he's doing it in Krishna's service, then it's akarma.
Right.
Yes? And I thought about this a lot because I struggled with this a lot in my devotional life, in that, like, for instance, like a couple of weeks ago I met a very effulgent man, like a Prabhu, and he had his wife was here and he had two children, and they were just so effulgent and very humble, you know, and I was speaking to them, I was really amazed because this man works very hard. And, you know, he has to support his family, and he was saying, you know, we're going to India, Prabhu, so, you know, please pray for us because we're going to be away from Kishore Kishori. And I gave them these compliments like, wow, you know, you seem so nice. And he said, oh, but you don't really see us, you know. And I said, well, I think I do, you know, like you must be just so humble. And he said, pray for me, you know, my work, I have to go to India and do all these things. And I remember when I was working, like, Arjuna is, like, even as a kshatriya, he has to have some passion. Like, even Krishna kind of antagonizes him a bit by saying, you're a coward if you don't fight, right? To get that passion so that he can fight. So on one hand, it's like yukta vyagra, it's perfect renunciation because he's fighting for Krishna. But whenever I was doing that, so to speak, or attempting to, it seemed that, yeah, you need a certain degree of passion because every act, I think, in the material world, like whatever work you have, it's abominable in some way, like dealing with karmi money, you know, and all these things. So in one respect, you need this passion in order to do it, which I couldn't imagine doing. And then at the same time, not be contaminated by that. Because while the act is pure, because he's doing it in Krishna's service, he comes here, I'm sure he gives donations, and he's supporting this temple. But he's somehow not contaminated by that passion, where me, I felt, this is impossible. I need to just do the Viagra and, you know, jump into a temple. You know what I'm saying? So in some way, like, I'm the pretender here. You see what I'm saying? Because I can't imagine doing that. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, it's a good quality of cultivating, you know, one's seen internally. If I see internally, you know, as just like I'm a, you know, basket case. But when we are under the protection of the spiritual master, when we're serving, I mean, we're a basket case. Well, I wasn't going to say I'm a basket case. But when you're engaged under the spiritual master, and then you follow into the best of your ability the instructions, then you're protected. You know, and I sometimes I think, you know, like, how is Krishna tolerating me? You know, like, you know, in because he can see everything. I mean, you don't see, like the devotee saying, you know, you said, you know, you don't, you know, I may praise you. Oh, Jai Nitai Prabhu, you're so nice, you're so great, such a nice devotee, such a, and you say, Prabhu, you don't know. You know, one feels, you don't see the full picture, you know. Well, Krishna sees the full picture. and sometimes you see, wow, how's he tolerating? Sometimes I think with my deity, I think it's amazing how he tolerates, you know, the kind of worship that you offer, which is like, you know, like, you know, like, you know, Krishna is in the spiritual world served by the most amazing devotees that one can ever imagine, by millions and millions of them. One, well, they're all equally beautiful, powerful, devoted, you know, like, amazing. He's like, and then it comes this, you know, like, sort of flapping thing, you know, just like, you know, mind somewhere, you know, like, doing an attempt of worship. You know, I was thinking, you know, how is it tolerating this sometimes, I think. And then I was thinking, you know, how kind Krishna is. You know, it's like a parent tolerates, you know, the little child, baby, you know, just like spilling stuff, you know, in the shoulder and, you know, doing things, you know, like that. And they, you know, happily tolerate the smells and the all the stuff that comes out of it, you know. So, you know, happily tolerates. Why? Because of love. So you can appreciate how loving and how kind Krishna is. But even then, how is that Krishna accepts, you know, a person like me to worship him? It's because my Guru Maharaj gave the order. So Krishna fulfills. Krishna accepts you because your Guru Maharaj basically says, okay, you do this for Krishna. So Krishna obliged. You know, the relationship is between my Guru Maharaj and Krishna. I'm just, you know, the beneficiary of my Guru Maharaj's kindness because I'm a basket case. And Krishna, you know, takes me as one of his own because one of his own have taken me as one of his, you know, if that makes sense. That's how I think. Krishna accepts me because my Guru Maharaj says, you can worship Krishna. He said, when I asked him, can I worship Krishna? He said, yes. And then Krishna now obliged, you know. So he tolerates out of, you know, pure love. It's amazing. So, you know, it makes you feel bad, you know, like you're such a useless, you know, so you ask for forgiveness. But you know, there's, you're protected under the umbrella of your Guru Maharaj's devotion to Krishna. So that's why it's such a compulsory thing. We have to, you know, be not only, you know, grasp the lotus feet of your Guru Maharaj, but be so grateful about, you know, what he's doing for you, you know. And now, because of his kindness, I can have this relationship. I can experience Krishna's love and kindness. So it's an amazing thing.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Anything else? One more question. Can stop here. Garantarashiman Bhagavatam Ki Jai.